Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. This NFL edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. As we look back at the week number 9 in the NFL, as we speak, the Oakland Raiders. I'm your host, Sue Real Quinn, taking you to 8:45. As we speak, the Oakland Raiders are attempting to win an overtime game against Kansas City. Kansas City has just called a timeout. It would be a 33-yard attempt by one Sebastian Janikowski. Oakland looked dead in this game. They came back from a 10-0 deficit. They came back from a 10-0 from an early deficit. Then they got the ball back. Down 20-17, Jason Campbell takes the team down the field, and Jacoby Ford makes a great play on a ball that looked like it was about to get picked off by Brandon Flowers. As again, I'm waiting to see, Kansas City has just called a timeout, waiting to see what happens with this field goal here. Brandon Flowers looked like he was about to make a pick against Jason Campbell, but Jacoby Ford made a great play, took the ball away from him to help set up the game-time field goal as they are about to attempt a 33-yard field goal that will win the game for Oakland. This would be a big win for Oakland. It's up, and it is good. Oakland wins over Kansas City. Big game. I mean, big win for Oakland. The Raiders now have won 3 straight. They go to, I believe, they're 4-5-4 on the season, and now that division has some juice to it because Kansas City will fall now to 5-3. San Diego won today, so they're right back in the mix. All of a sudden, you have a 3-team race in that AFC West, which is, at the beginning of the year, looked like a division that was a joke, but now, you got 3 pretty good teams in that division. Kansas City still has to play at San Diego, and we'll play Denver. Still has to play Denver too as well, but big win for the Oakland Raiders. They come back at home, defeat the Kansas City Chiefs 23-20 in overtime. Again, and this is how bad the Raiders have been. This is the Raiders' first 3-game winning streak since December 2002. And that was, of course, their Super Bowl year when they lost the Super Bowl. They lost the Super Bowl to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So they've been dreadful. So they've been a part of the decade. Last 7 to 8 years, but playing well right now. Got a good running game. Campbell has managed the game well, done some good things. With running the team, managing the game, and deliberately not really staying away from turnovers. But a big win for the Oakland Raiders as they take out the Kansas City Chiefs 23-20 in overtime on a week that was full of a couple surprises. Week 9. Of the NFL season, second half of the NFL season getting started. We're going to begin with the game of the week, which took place down at Lincoln Financial Field. The Philadelphia Eagles taking on the Indianapolis Colts. Philadelphia takes out Indianapolis 26-24. Eagles now improved to 5-3. 5-3 on the season. Indianapolis falls to 5-3 in a game that basically was controlled by Philadelphia. It was controlled by Philadelphia. I know Indianapolis had a late surge in the first half, and at the end of towards the latter part of the first half to take a 17-16 lead. You thought Philadelphia might be in some trouble as the first three or four possessions, they were just kicking field goals. I mean, the first 4 possessions, they had 1 touchdown and 3 field goals. Should have been up. They were up 13-0. They should have been up by more than that. But they were not, again, able to convert their red zone opportunities into touchdowns. But the second half, Philadelphia, to me, dominated the second half. Indianapolis only scored 7 points that late. Touchdown to close it within 2 points. Michael Vick, I mean, the offense looks a lot better when Michael Vick is under center. I mean, he, again, has a big day rushing, threw the ball extremely well, almost had over 300 yards of total offense by himself. Eagles ran the ball well with Sean McCoy, Michael McCoy and Michael Vick as well, had close to 200 yards rushing. that really held Peyton Manning in check. Peyton Manning was about 30 for 52 for 287 yards and had two interceptions, including both of them to Asante Samuel. And the last one coming on that drive where Indianapolis looked like they were trying to set up for a game with a field goal, but didn't get really close. They were at their own 40-41 yard line, but Asante Samuel picked Manning off to seal the deal for Philadelphia, as Philadelphia improves to 5-3 on the season. Again, Andy Reid coming off a bye week, he's perfect. He's 12-0 coming off bye weeks in his career, and Philadelphia gets a much needed win, 26-24 over Indianapolis. Indianapolis had all kinds of injuries. Their receivers are going out like they're dropping like flies here. I mean, they've already lost Dallas Clark for the season. They've already lost Anthony Gonzalez for the season. Now Austin Collie gets injured on a hit, and I got a comment on this hit because, I understand the whole concept of trying to protect the players, but to me, it was a penalty call. Hit a 15-yard unnecessary roughness penalty called on the Eagles at the end, I believe it was the end of the first half, coming towards close to the end of the first half. Austin Collie got lit up. I mean, he got hit twice on the play, basically. And the penalty was called hitting a defensive receiver. And I'm saying to myself, he caught the ball and got hit almost simultaneously, but as he catches the ball, the ball got forced loose. It wasn't a fumble. It was an incomplete pass. But, I mean, how is he viewed as a defensive receiver when you catch the ball? My definition of a defensive receiver, maybe the NFL is different, clearly on that play was different, is if the ball is just out of reach and then the receiver can't protect himself and they just lit up. To me, when the receiver catches the ball, it's all fair game. Receiver catches the ball and makes even half a move, he's considered to be basically a running back. He's a runner at that point. And a runner, you can hit him anywhere. You can do anything but grab the face mask or do a horse collar. So, again, that was an awful call by the officials. After that, you really thought that was going to really take the air out of Philadelphia. They did. Certainly they were able to recover. But that led to Indianapolis That led to an Indianapolis touchdown, and of course Indianapolis would take the lead going into halftime at 17-16. And I thought that was going to be the turning point of the game, because after that, Indianapolis just marched down the field and scored an easy touchdown, but Philadelphia was able to recover and go on and win 26-24. San Diego takes out Houston 29-23. San Diego improves to 4-5 on the season. Houston falls to 4-4. San Diego wins its second straight game after the 2-5 start. And here go the Chargers. I mean, this is what the Chargers do. They'll start off slow and then get out to then get hot. Phillip Rivers. I mean, how good is Phillip Rivers? I mean, you can really make a case. And again, he won't get strong consideration because they're 4-5 right now. But you can make a case that he is as valuable to his team as any player in the league, not named Peyton Manning. He has no receivers right now. Antonio Gates, it was injured. Of course, you have Vince Jackson been out for the season with the holdout. He'll be back maybe November 28th. Patrick Clayton. I mean, those are guys who are catching passes for him. Buster Davis and these guys like that, backup tight ends catching touchdown passes. This is remarkable what Phillip Rivers has been able to do. 17-23, 295 yards, 4 touchdowns, just had 1 interception. San Diego was down 23-14 in this game, hung around, and then Phillip Rivers took over in the second half, Adrian Foster had a big game for Houston. He went 27 carries, 127 yards, 2 touchdowns, but it was not enough. Houston is, Houston is like a bully team. They can beat bad teams. I know they have to win over Indianapolis, but that was week one. But when it all comes down to it, Houston is not a team to me to be taken seriously. I just think that they are good offense, but their defense cannot stop anybody in a big spot. So, Houston falls to 4-4, and San Diego improves to 4-5 on the season. Coming up, we will do some overtime with the Jets, and Brett Favre pulls magic out of his hat. We'll talk about that, and also a beatdown on the Beltway. We'll get into that and much, much more on this Around the League edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call as we look at Week 9 of the NFL. I'm Cyril Quinn. We will be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call as we go around the NFL Week 9 in the league where no contract is guaranteed. The New York Jets take out the Detroit Lions 23-20 in overtime. The Lions, it's been the story of their season, close but no cigar. It was another tough game to a quality team. Looks like the Lions were going to pull this out, but Mark Sanchez made a couple plays down the stretch to Santonio Holmes. Bradley Edwards had a big touchdown catch earlier in the game. The Lions, going to look back at a missed extra point, and that really did them in as Jason Hansen got injured on a roughing the kicker, which led to a touchdown earlier in the game, and then they had the Donovan Sue come in and kick the extra point, which I don't understand. Tell me how a 300-pound defensive tackle is a better option at kicking than your punter. Can you explain that to me? I know kicking a field goal and punting the football are two different things, but you're still kicking the football. So I don't understand how you bring in, again, your 6'5", 300-pound defensive tackle to kick an extra point, and how he's a better option than your punter. I don't get that at all. Maybe they feared that the punter could possibly get hurt, and they have nobody to punt the ball. Maybe that's the case. But still, it really turned out to be the difference in the game. As it would have been, Detroit would have won this game, 21-20. But the Jets able to win in overtime. Sanchez had a pretty good day, 22-39, 323 yards. Touchdown and one interception. The Jets improved to 6-2 on the season. Detroit falls to 2-6. Minnesota survives Arizona 27-24 in overtime. A game where it looked like they were basically left for dead. They were down 24-10 late in the fourth quarter, but midway through the fourth quarter, about 6 minutes left. Brett Favre, a couple of touchdown passes down the stretch. And they get a run behind along with a field goal in overtime to get the win. They're still behind the eight ball as far as Minnesota is at 3-5. But again, had they lost this game, becoming 2-6, the season basically been finished. A huge day for Brett Favre. Most yards he's ever had passing 446 yards, completed 36 of 47, had two touchdowns. and a pick, of course he threw a pick, and he wouldn't be by far if he didn't throw any picks in the game. Minnesota just dominated this game from the line, scrimmage-wise. They had 500 yards in total offense to Arizona's 225 yards. Again, Minnesota improves to 3-5 on the season. Arizona falls to 3-5 on the season. Baltimore dominates Miami in a game that was close early, but Baltimore pulled away in the second half, 26-10. Joe Flacco, 20-27, 266 yards, couple of touchdowns, no picks. Chad Henne had a rough day, going 22-34, 231, but had three interceptions to no touchdowns. Miami drops to 4-4. Baltimore improves to 6-2 on the season. Nice win for the Ravens. It gets a very good, a pretty good Miami team that came into this game undefeated on the road. Baltimore will now wait to see what Pittsburgh does on Monday night. As they go to 6-2, Pittsburgh is at 5-2. So those two teams are jockeying for a position in that AFC North. Atlanta over Tampa Bay, 27-21. Pretty good, very, very good game. Matt Ryan, Atlanta improves to 6-2 on the season. Tampa Bay falls to 5-3. Matt Ryan, 235 yards, a touchdown, no picks. Michael Turner had a big day, 107 yards rushing, two touchdowns. Matt Ryan now as a starter at home for his career, 17-1. So it's pretty much money in the bank when Atlanta's playing these home games with him under center. Tampa Bay, I'm not gonna call him a fraud, because nobody expected Tampa Bay to do anything. But you know, they're doing what they should be doing. I mean, they lose to teams that are better than them, and they beat the teams that they are either equal to or just as good as. So, which is, you know, definitely showing improvement there. But you know, you look at them against the big teams, they really struggle. They got smoked by Pittsburgh, and also New Orleans. So, you know, I can't criticize them too much. They were extremely competitive in this game. It looked like Atlanta was going to take control of the game, but they hung in there. Josh Freeman had a couple of picks, but still hung in there and made a couple of plays to keep the game close. But too much Atlanta down the stretch. Atlanta game is in. Atlanta's really in control of that division. Despite only having a one-game lead over Tampa Bay and New Orleans, they've now beaten both Tampa Bay and New Orleans, have a home win, a road win against the Saints. So that division right now is theirs to lose at 6-2. Still to come, we will head to Cleveland, and where New England had no idea what it was in for, and also a scrimmage in the Northwest, and we'll also talk about the game up north of the border as the Bears and Buffalo battle. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call NFL post game edition as we look back at week nine of the NFL as we get ready for this Saturday night game with Green Bay and Dallas, and also you have some Monday night football tomorrow night with Pittsburgh going up against Cincinnati. So we'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up call. Welcome back on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, NFL Post Game Edition. 20 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour, we're taking you to 8:45 this evening. Taking you to 8:45 as we look back again on week 9 of the NFL season. Still, you have, of course, Dallas, whose season is just lost right now, trying to play spoiler, and that's what they're going to be playing for the rest of the season, spoiler. They take on all of a sudden hot Green Bay Packers, coming off a great win versus the New York Jets last week, shutting out the Jets for Sunday Night Football, and also for tomorrow night, Pittsburgh taking on Cincinnati. Pittsburgh trying to exact some revenge on the Bengals. That the Bengals swept them along with the rest of the division last year to win the AFC North. Chicago takes out Buffalo 22-19. Jay Cutler, good game for him. Chicago improves to 5-3. Buffalo just can't get right. I mean, 0-8 on the season. Now I've lost three straight games, 3 points or less. They had back-to-back overtime losses versus Kansas City and Baltimore. Again, played close with no cigar for them as well. They dropped to 0-8 on the season, getting ready for that number one pick come next April. Jay Cutler, 17-30 for 188 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. Ryan Fitzpatrick, this is why Buffalo loses games. Yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick goes 31-51, 299, touchdown, but did have 2 picks again. Buffalo has lost 3 straight games by 3 points or less. They will not go, they will win a game. I predict they will win 2 games. To be honest with you, they played much better than what their record would indicate for the last couple of weeks. They're a bit bad. I mean, they're awful, but they're not just god awful. I mean, they're not the Detroit Lions of a couple of years ago that didn't win a game. A little bit better than that, but it's hard sledding in Buffalo right now. I mean, that team, that franchise just has, to me, no direction. I don't see it turning around anytime soon. I mean, they have some decent pieces on defense in the secondary and okay running backs. They really just they don't have a lot of talent at all. And you wonder what's going on in the front office with the coaching situation and just not a lot of stability there in upstate New York. So I can't see this thing turning around anytime soon. New Orleans crushes Carolina 34-3. Drew Brees had a good day for him. They improved to 6-3. Carolina is just, kind of playing out the string already through 8 games for them at 1-7. John Fox, might as well basically probably have just 1 foot out the door. I mean, that he will definitely be one of the first ones fired come the Monday after the last Sunday of the season. New Orleans, all of a sudden, everybody talks about they're struggling and they're Super Bowl hangover. They're 6-3. They have the second best record in football. I mean, they have the second best record in football, only trailing, three or four teams by a half game. And, half game behind the Giants and also Atlanta in the NFC at 6-4. They're both at 6-2. They probably played extremely, extremely well today, just taking care of business, doing what they were supposed to do against a bad Carolina team. That Cleveland loss does not look as bad now when you think about it. Considering what they've done. So give them a ton of credit for hanging in there, had a big win against Pittsburgh last week and seen it, and they seem to pick up some momentum going into the second half of the season. The Giants crushed the Seattle Seahawks, and I mean, this was Globetrotters versus Washington Generals, 41-7, one of the worst home losses in the history of the Seattle Seahawks. Not to say that they're the Green Bay Packers in terms of their history, but they've been around came in the league, I believe in 76, about 30 years or so. Listen, Seattle, it's amazing. Like, the Giants are 6-2. Seattle football is a 4-4. But Seattle is just bad. It's amazing that they have 4 wins. I mean, again, they're one of those teams that they look worse, actually, than, say, the Detroit Lions, who only has two wins. I mean, when they lose, they just get knocked around. They're not a good football team at all. Again, there's mind-boggling on them being 4-4. I'm just figuring out how are they 4-4. When you watch them play, you know, Charlie Whitehurst in, Coach Hasselbeck is out with injury. He hasn't been playing, doesn't sound like he's been playing lights-out football himself. Again, they're just a bad-looking team. But right in the middle of that division, as they are, you know, top of the Rams for first place. I mean, they're top of the Rams. For first place in the AFC West. Somebody's gonna have to win that division. But Seattle just gets toyed with. The Giants right now are playing better football than any team, not only the NFC, but maybe playing better football than any team in the NFL. They've won 5 straight games, have not lost since, you know, Tennessee knocked them around in September. That seems like it was 2 years ago. Based on how far the Giants have come, Eli Manning, you know, good game out of him. The running game is solid as usual, and they really, really are playing great football right now as they head into a tough part of their schedule come the second half of the season. And of course, yeah, Kansas City taking out Oakland. I mean, Oakland taking out Kansas City 23-20 on the Shabaskin Janikowski 33-yard field goal in overtime, big win. For the Oakland Raiders, as they go to 4-4 on the season, Kansas City falls to 5-3. Oakland out 1 game behind Kansas City. Kansas City is a game and a half ahead of San Diego at 4-5. Very tight race. It's only a tight race. See, Kansas City could have wrapped up that division with a win today, because had they won, they would have went to 6-2 on the season. Oakland would have been 3-5, and San Diego's already 4-5. So they would have been 3 games in the loss column ahead of the next set of the second place team. 3 games with basically 8 games to play. That's a big lead, a huge lead in the NFL. That really, I mean, you have to have a collapse. It would take a collapse for them to not win the division. Now, you have a situation where they have to play Oakland again, and they still have to play Kansas City. They still have to play San Diego again. So that division now has all of a sudden tightened up big time. It should be a great race heading down the stretch, especially into December. Still to come, we will look back at the shocker of the day. At the shocker of the day down in Cleveland, we'll talk about that. We'll also touch on the NFL Top 100 as that was concluded this past Thursday, with, of course, Jerry Rice being named the greatest player of all time. I had some issues with that. Talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning We Can Call NFL Post Game Edition. We'll talk about that and much, much more. We'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call NFL post game edition, week 9 of the NFL season, as we kick off the second half of the season of the NFL season. Now we're into November, so it should be some cold weather. And now you're really going to start to see, who's for real. I think now you're going to start to see a separation with some of these teams. You were not able to tell that by this game, by this next game, and that was Cleveland against New England. New England goes into Cleveland and absolutely gets their heads handed to them. This was not a fluke-type game. And, haven't we said that before in a game involving the Browns? I mean, they went out of New Orleans in the Superdome and just smacked New Orleans all up and down the field. And they beat them 30-17 about two or three weeks ago, a few weeks back. They hand New England just an embarrassing 34-14 defeat, improved to 3-5 on the season. New England falls to 6-2 on the season. Of course, losing their first game since since they lost to the Jets back in September. Again, this was domination by Cleveland. This was not a fluke whatsoever. Cleveland outgained New England 404-283 in terms of total yardage. Peyton Hillis had a big game, 29 carries, 184 yards, 2 touchdowns. Cleveland as a team had 230 yards rushing. Colt McCoy, I saw some of his game with the red zone. He made some good plays. I mean, they had no interceptions, no touchdowns, but also had a rushing touchdown, was 14-19 for 174 yards. Again, no turnovers, which is always key for a young quarterback. Made some good plays. I'm not ready to anoint him as the Cleveland franchise quarterback as they're, legitimate, but he's definitely the best quarterback they have on that roster as of right now. I would let him ride out. I would not bring Dell home unless McCoy gets hurt. I would not bring back Dell home to start, as I think they have a nice thing going right now with McCoy at the helm. But Cleveland's going to be one of those teams. The AFC is too deep. If they were in the AFC, they'd be right in the mix as far as trying to make the playoffs. But unfortunately, the AFC is a war zone, too many quality teams. 10-6 might not make the playoffs in the AFC. That's how good the AFC is right now. But they're going to be one of those teams that if you're trying to make the playoffs, you're trying to win a division, you're trying to wrap up some home field advantage, you do not want to see the Cleveland Browns because they play hard. Game in, game out. They easily could have had 2 or 3 more victories. Lost a couple tough games in September that went down to the wire. I'm not a big Eric Mangini fan, but one thing you cannot knock how hard the team plays. They have some talent, don't have a lot of talent, but the teams play hard, and they really took it to New England big time. And I'm sure Eric Mangini loved every moment of it, going up against his former mentor, Bill Belichick. I heard a couple people try to pick Cleveland not to win but to cover some of the spread. But I there's no way that you could think that Cleveland was gonna go up there, that New England was gonna go down there and get whooped the way they got whooped against Cleveland. But it was pure domination by the Cleveland Browns. As again, 34-14 the game. Game that was never close. Cleveland jumped out to a 10-0 lead and kind of was in control from start to finish. So when you look back at the day in the NFL again, certainly it was that Cleveland game was a shocking game. Other than that, no major surprises. There are three teams in the NFC, and we've been on this theme in these post-game shows, and also the round with the NFL shows on Monday. We've been on this thing for quite a while now on, who's the best in the NFC, who's real in the NFC. To me, right now, there are three teams that, to me, have separated themselves. Obviously, you have to begin with the Giants, 5-game winning streak, 6-2, a complete football team, with the defense, pass rush, the running game. Manning has some weapons with the receivers, so they got a Super Bowl winning coach. They won a Super Bowl, know how to win. So they are a complete team right now. They are the best in the NFC. But I also think you have to look at them, along with the Packers and the Eagles. Those three teams, to me, are clearly the best in the NFC. I'm not putting Atlanta up there. I've seen Atlanta get knocked around by the Eagles. I don't trust Atlanta. I still don't trust their defense in a big spot. I love Matt Ryan as a quarterback. I think he's a tremendous talent, and I like Turner, of course, with the running game, but I just don't trust their defense in a big spot. So I think they are slightly below those three teams. New Orleans is right. To me, Atlanta is right there in New Orleans. I mean, to me, Atlanta and New Orleans are in the same boat. After those five teams, it's like, you know, take a pick. Yeah, the Bears, Redskins, the NFC West, one, you know, those teams, you know, the Seahawks and Rams. You know, the Vikings are on that lower end, I would say. So after that, it's like, you know, who knows? Who knows who's going to get that sixth and final playoff spot? But those five teams, those five teams, you know, those three at top, you know, Giants, Packers, Eagles are, to me, clearly the best in the class of the NFC. Very interesting to see when Philly takes on the Giants. I'll be very that's going to be must see TV as when those two teams battle, and those two teams battle for NFC East and I think NFC supremacy. Still to come, we will discuss. We'll talk about the NFL top 100 players. I have some issues with it. Talk about that and look ahead towards next week. We'll be right back. I am Cyril Quinn taking you again to 8:45 on this NFL postgame edition as we look back at week number 9 in the NFL. The league with no contract is guaranteed. Welcome back to the NFL show on this week 9 edition of the NFL show. Around the league we go. Final segment as 38 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour. The NFL top 100 players finished up on Thursday, and to no one's surprise, you had, well, to my minor surprise, but not a big shock, you had Jerry Rice number one. Jerry Rice won. Jim Brown 2, Lawrence Taylor 3, Joe Montana 4, Walter Payton 5, Unitas 6, Reggie White 7, Peyton Manning 8, Don Henson 9, Dick Butkus 10. So that was your top 10. I had an issue right at the top. Jim Brown, and again, Jerry Rice holds every record imaginable. We all know this. But Jim Brown was a guy who, to me, I look at the definition of greatness and, you know, immortality as far as sports goes, as a what did the position and what did the sport look like before you kind of got in compared to what it looked like after you were gone. And to me, Jim Brown, there was the NFL and the running back position before Jim Brown got there, and the position after Jim Brown got there, and it was completely different. And Jim Brown played four of his years in a 12-game season we're getting retired with every record known to man as far as rushing, touchdowns, the whole nine. Still holds the records for 100 for rushing yards per game, which is 104, which is ridiculous when you think about it. The next closest person, the next closest player who has a significant amount of carries is Barry Sanders at 99.8. Yeah, Terrell Davis at 97.5. I don't even count Chris Johnson and Adrian Peterson because they have put enough time in as far as how many carries and how many years they've been active. They both are at 100, over 100. Chris Johnson at 101, and Adrian Peterson is at about 98, 99. But Jim Brown played most of his career, his first four seasons in a 12-game season, his last five seasons in a 14-game season. Still had over 106 touchdowns, still averaged 5.2 yards a carry. Okay? You know, think about that. And he only played nine seasons. He played all nine seasons, to me, at top level, won three MVPs won three MVPs as a running back. Again, to me, he transcended the position and changed the running back position. And that's why I have to put him on Jerry Rice. I don't think Jerry Rice transcended. Great as Jerry Rice was, he did not change the wide receiver position. And that's why, frankly, I would put Jerry Rice third behind Jim Brown and Lawrence Taylor. Lawrence Taylor revolutionized the linebacker position forever. I mean, nobody had ever seen an outside linebacker or linebacker with that kind of athleticism be able to rush the passer the way he was able to rush the passer and still drop back in the coverage, still be able to chase down running backs, still be able to play every down. Okay? So, and again, Lawrence Taylor changed the way that defenses was played. Lawrence Taylor changed the way that offenses is pass protected. So when you had that, I mean, there's a level of greatness when you had that, you impact the game itself. I mean, that level of greatness is just, you know, again, it's transcendent. And I don't think, again, as great as Jerry Rice was, I don't think Jerry Rice was a transcendent. Was he a formal player based on his time and his stats alone? Yes. Was he a transcendent player? No. I don't think Jerry Rice was that kind of player. So, you know, I have to put those two ahead of him. But, you know, it's certainly up for the debate. Certainly, Rice couldn't be no lower than third. No lower than third. Other issues I had with the list, there's no way, as I go further down, there's no way that you can have John Elway below Brett Favre. I mean, that's just ridiculous to me. But Brett Favre was a little bit too high for my liking at 20. Yeah, Elway 23. I mean, come on. John Elway dragged those Broncos teams to three Super Bowls in the 80s when they were average teams at best. Favre is not as good. I mean, there's all there is to it. The gap between Brady and Manning and Brady is too far. I can understand you having Brady over Manning, but you can't have Manning 8 and Brady 21. I mean, to me, Brady should have been in the top 15, top 12, somewhere. I would put Brady 13, 14, 12, somewhere in that range. Those are my basic issues. And also, you easily could have had, I'm looking at a guy who could have easily been off the list, and I'd say Joe Namath. I mean, Joe Namath, look at Joe Namath's stats. Of course, I know he won the Super Bowl and, you know, the whole prediction, that whole 9 yards, but he had a losing record. He had a losing record at 62-63 was his record for his career, and he had 173 touchdowns to 220 interceptions. He had two seasons in his whole career where he had more touchdowns than interceptions. I think he might be one of the most overrated players in NFL history, to be honest with you. So those are my issues with that list. One guy who should have been on there is Steve Largent. Largent left. He had every record, receiving yards, receiving touchdowns, every record known to man when he retired. Every single one. In an era that was more running than passing. The passing game was just starting to really take off during the era when Barge played. So that's my issue with that. We will see you next time on the NFL show, also the Saturday morning wake-up call. Have a great night. So long.